During tough times, it's appropriate to note how important the development and maintenance of trust is in organizations. Not a lot of conversation has been had with regard to trust, and I think it's now an important time to really consider that as a part of the fundamental role of the innovation leader. Certainly, in the leader's tool chest should be a deeper understanding of the role trust plays in relationships, in group process, indeed, in the whole organizational dynamic. In trying economic times such as those we've been experiencing lately, the loss of trust is perhaps one of the most significant things that is apparent, not only within organizations, but broadly across society. There is certainly ample evidence of the challenge to trust when one looks at the financial marketplace, at government, at the role that so-called leaders played in decisions and judgments that were made that served to cause a great deal of the economic and social problems that results from a lack of accountability, ownership, integrity, honesty, and trust. As a result of the convergence of these various negative forces, not much trust exists in society or in the workplace, and raises the challenge with regard to exactly how is trust created. I think the first important thing to note about trust is that it is not something that you can actually do. Trust is more evidentiary than something that an individual or a leader can actually do. Trust is evidence of what has already been done and what is in place upon which people can depend. This notion that somehow or other through action alone you can build trust and that you can actually do things that result in trust because of having done them is inadequate at best. The notion of trust is one that tells us that in an environment where the appropriate alignment and integration of positive behaviors and related actions and activities actually create the conditions within which trust becomes an element of the experience of individuals within a particular organization, system, or relationship. Therefore, the focus with regard to trust should really be on building the contextual framework within which trust can live, so that the exemplars of trust can be present for those who are really looking to be a part of a trusting and positive environment where they can confidently take action, make decisions, challenge, and lead the organization in innovative and change strategies. In the June 2009 issue of Harvard Business Review, James O'Toole and Warren Bennis remind us of the foundations of building a culture or context for trust. The yardstick they remind us for performance in American corporate leaders was relatively simple, the extent to which they created wealth for investors. However, that's not necessarily an adequate tool set for evaluating the character and content of leaders in organizations, especially organizations that are rapidly involved in innovation and in change. So the notion of creating openness and high levels of interaction in these days translated into levels of transparency are meant to be a foundation upon which organizations can build the trust and strength of leadership as they begin to think about the impact that leadership can have on the life, integrity, and value of that organization. O'Toole and Bennis suggest that when people who need to communicate in all directions in an organization and are able to do so with honesty and frankness, whether teams are able to challenge their own assumptions and to do so openly and freely, and even when boards of directors are able to communicate important messages to their company's leadership, that certainly affects the relationship between candor, trust, and performance. Emphasizing these relatively complex sets of relationships and not simplifying them beyond their level of complexity It is important to begin to recognize that the leader creates the conditions and context and framework within which that can occur. We have plenty of evidence where closed and narrow and hierarchical and fairly autocratic relationships result in highly negative impact on the organization, certainly negatively affect relationships, and ultimately can have an impact on the life and dynamics of the system itself. Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Outliers, mentions a number of things related to airline accidents. In that text, he suggests that the kinds of errors that cause plane crashes are invariably errors of teamwork and errors of communication. Here again, that transparency, openness, availability of information, the utility of that information, and the recognition that that openness, availability, and utility is a fundamental way of doing business is critical to the viability of an organization in its work and its relationship with its members that engages its challenges as well as its opportunities in a way that's meaningful for all the participants. You know, often in organizations, there's a huge argument for transparency, but the need for secretiveness and dark rooms seems to be a constant in organizations that raises a lot of challenge with regard to what it is that keeps people from being transparent and from being open. We've heard certainly managers and staff talk about the darkness that they feel in organizations where there are secrets, narrow communication, clear lines of demarcation between what one group knows versus what another group knows, and precisely how individuals are kept in the dark in ways that even impede the ability to do their own work well and to understand those factors that influence their ability to do that work really well. This kind of transparency and openness in organizations certainly seems rational and ethically appropriate, and clearly the evidence suggests it helps business run more efficiently and effectively with better outcomes and certainly better work relationships. But still, it seems apparent at many levels of measure that such openness and transparency, frankness, and equity in organizations just simply isn't there. And the price that we pay for the lack of that kind of transparency is certainly evident in much of what we are currently experiencing. Imagine bank presidents saying to their boards and to their own leaders that they are selling products which they have no clue what they mean, how they work, indeed what they are, and continue to sell those kinds of products without being clear, understandable, simple, with high levels of utility, with a language that all can understand and to which each can relate mutually. Imagine how that impacts the integrity, viability, honesty, and ethics of an organization when even bank presidents cannot clearly describe the products that they sell in terms that can be understood by themselves and by anybody to whom they relate. So for innovation leaders, some of the foundations that, while they seem very simple, are very often forgotten as a basis for establishing that leadership relationship with the organization with staff. There are essential foundations that each leader must incorporate into their own practice as they reflect the transparency, the openness, and the honesty in the organization, and the honesty in their own leadership position and the expression of that role. O'Toole and Bennis suggest that there are 8 practical notions necessary to developing a culture of candor and openness, frankness, and transparency in an organization that can be quickly represented in the role of the leader, and that consistently addressing these skills and making them the cornerstone of your communication and relational attributes as a leader will be critical to the ability to sustain the organization and to build a context and a framework for trust that all members of the organization can depend on. Number one, of course, is the most obvious. Tell the truth. You know, we often have an impulse to tell people what it is they think they want to hear or what they believe they need to hear. The tendency to do that in order to keep peace and to avoid conflict is obviously apparent. The strength of a leader, however, is the leader who is constantly related to the truth, and that relationship drives the communication they have with all individuals. They recognize as leaders, especially as innovation leaders, that without dealing with the essential truth, with what's real, what's honest and frank, compromises with regard to subsequent decisions and actions in the organization become clearly apparent and can be very obstructive with regard to the integrity, value, and opportunities of the organization. The innovation leader has a constant awareness, attention, and commitment to the unvarnished truth, or as O'Toole and Bennis say, the unvarnished story. There is a story for every event and every circumstance that goes on in the life of people and organizations. Executives, innovation leaders, must always be able to tell the story, but to tell the story in light of what really occurs, not the story in light of mythology or what is hoped to occur. Often you'll hear leaders say, well, I want to preserve or keep safe my employees by not sharing with them things that would make them feel unsafe or uncomfortable or cause stress in their relationship with the organization or in their own work lives. That is paternalism played out at the highest level of ineffectiveness. It's not the role of the executive to keep people safe from the information that's essential to their decision-making and their action-taking. It's important that people know the choices that they have to make, know the variables and vagaries that are embedded in those choices. It is more important for the leader to support the individual in the choices they have to make than to keep them from making those choices. It's important for the leader to make sure that the tools, the information, the guidance, the knowledge that people need to have to make good judgments is available to them, and the support, information, knowledge, and skills necessary to use those talents and to use that information in a meaningful way is a critical skill set of the leader in their relationship with those with whom they work. Keeping information from individuals or protecting them from negative information does nothing for the individuals or the organization. It's simply paternalistic, controlling, unilateral behavior on the part of the leader that does not represent engagement, investment, or the ownership of the life of work and the life of the worker and the participation of the worker in the life of the organization. This attachment to truth and to honesty is also an attachment to the transparency of this truth and honesty, making sure that it is available at all times and in all ways to the people with whom you relate and work. Again, it is to be emphasized that it's just not the sharing of information in blunt and rote ways that is critical. It is the accompaniment of that information with care, concern, with support, with guidance, and with the ability to help individuals deal with that information, translate that information appropriately, and help them make the necessary choices that their life calls them to do in light of the information with which they are confronted. This absolute commitment to truth comes with an absolute commitment to caring, to relationship, and to support, so that the truth is fully expressed, fully engaged, and the capacity to manage it accompanies the delivery of a truthful message. Second, it is really important in organizations, if we're committed to truth, that truth is a multilateral, meta kind of experience, and that truth moves all directions in organizations. Truth should move as much toward the leader as it does away from the leader. The leader should be available to hearing truth from others as much as the leader is willing to share truth with others. They should hear truths from those that they're not comfortable in hearing truth from. Leadership should be informed so that individuals have a comfort level and a confidence in speaking truth to power and to leaders. If leaders have an attachment to truth and a capacity for truth, that attachment is as much evidenced in the ability to receive truthful messages and to be able to deal and accommodate the truthful delivery of news and information from others, including those that so-called report to the leader or who are employees of the organization. Truth to power is perhaps the most important truth, yet the one that is most often compromised because of the power relationship and equation in organizations. A truly effective leader represents the notion that an organization is really a set of engagements and partnerships between the players and members of the system, each contributing something to the vitality of the system, that the system would be bereft or diminished if that contribution wasn't being made. Therefore, it's really critical and important for the leader to begin to recognize that they too must be as available to the truth that comes from other parts of the organization, from other players in the system that may have more direct access and ready communication of that truth than the leader has by virtue of their location, their role, and their position. Openness to that truth means not only expressing it, but receiving it, managing it, and demonstrating through mentoring and modeling the ability to engage that truth, to be able to deal with that truth in the same way as the truth that you generate, and to recognize that truth for its own sake, regardless of where it comes from, is a critical leadership and organizational element that is fundamental to the integrity of the system, the viability of the system, and the availability of the system to its own opportunities and challenges. So it's a vital skill for all in the organization to be available for truth. Now, the third one is a little unusual, but just as important to think about. Contrarians in an organization are often not well received. We all know that in most organizations there are people that we can classify as negaholics or constantly contrarian. Now, one of the things we have to distinguish between is the contrarian who has really got an eye on what's going on and raises questions about the legitimacy of decisions and actions, and the one who simply lives in a dark place and wants everybody else to live in that place as well. The true contrarian is the one whose eyes are open and who's fully available and aware of the challenges and changes that are constantly battering the periphery of an organization or creating the internal dynamics necessary to respond to clear and definitive changes going around the organization, both inside and outside. Innovation is absolutely incomprehensible and probably incongruous and unachievable without some level of contrarian processes incorporated into the innovation dynamic. This recognition of the contrarian idea, the contrarian process, or the contrarian dynamic is central to the notion of innovation and of creativity. Being able to rail against prevailing reality or past practices or rituals and routines or history or current status is really one of the foundational elements of raising issues of what we need to become, how we need to change, how innovation needs to drive the organization. In other words, what we're really saying is how contrarianism really needs to be a part of the values of the organization, as long as that contrarianism is a perception of those real factors and forces which in some way cause, challenge, or push the walls of the organization and its leadership in ways that it might not normally and ordinarily do in the course of its ritual and routine work processes. The company cannot innovate successfully if there is no mechanism for recognizing new ideas and changes and challenges, those things that open up our assumptions and create a different frame of reference for legitimizing assumptions and notions that are different from the ones that we might bring to the table. We must find in the organization those people whose skills are such that they can raise those challenges in a positive and meaningful way, position them in ways in which they can fully participate in the dialogue and discussion, in all of the discourse that raises the issues necessary for appropriate and meaningful innovation dialogue in a way that creates different ways of thinking, different processes in the organization, and challenges, if you will, to the way the organization operates and thinks about what it is and how it does the work that it does. Also, these people need to be promoted and encouraged, rewarded and invested in a way that represents who they are. Now, one of the things we have to understand about these kind of people is that they're often not the kind of people that are challenged by the traditional kinds of rewards and organizational structures that perhaps non-contrarians and most of the rest of us are. So building a clear goodness of fit, tightness of fit, if you will, between the reward systems you put in place and the needs of these kinds of innovators and creative individuals is a critical part of the leadership thinking of the innovation leader when they begin to address contrarians. And remember, contrarians need much more personal recognition, personal attention, personal interaction than would normally be necessary for perhaps the rest of us. Next, we have to really have unpleasant conversations in organizations. And one of the things that innovation leaders have to be able to do is practice the unpleasant conversations. It doesn't mean that you have to be unpleasant or you have to be cold or cruel or heartless, but we have to be able to confront some of the unpleasant issues that may create some challenging decisions and some decisions that individuals in the organization may not be pleased with, may not be receptive to, and may find themselves extremely challenges. You know, good leaders have learned and have practiced and have come to know how to deliver challenging what could be just simply bad news kindly, with care and effectiveness, and in a way that engages the stakeholders who have some ownership with regard to that news. It's a very important understanding of the role of the leader. It's not so much how one challenges when there's opportunities or when there's joy or when there's happiness or when there's rewards or when there's positive and sometimes rah-rah growth in the organization. What is equally as important as those skills, not less important or more important, is the ability to talk about the challenges, to talk about the hardships, to talk about those things that didn't work or aren't working, to talk about some of the decisions that have to be made that may actually be operating in reverse of challenge. And that becomes a really important element of the skill set of really effective leaders. Being able to deliver that, to do it in a way that doesn't positively cause pain, in a way that doesn't cause unnecessary hurt, in a way that can still engage individuals in the understanding of the difficulty and the challenge, and perhaps even participating in some of the ways in which we might address that challenge more effectively. As the news that's not so positive gets delivered and generated in the organization. That ability, that talent to be able to deliver, to manage, to communicate, and to relate negative news in a effective way with others is a skill set that grows with practice and even grows with application as you become more trusting of your competence and your capacity to manage negative news and to deliver it. You become more effective in the managing and delivering of that news and subsequent efforts. And also, you become more trustworthy, more valuable, more connected to those with whom you have to relate that news, and with whom you will seek responses to that news together. Next, it's important for the leader to recognize that your sources of information are as critical as the information itself. Too often, we develop templates and dashboards and instruments that give us back information of a particular kind in a particular way in a format that is organized and systematic. What's really important is to have those kinds of tools, but to recognize almost as critically that the diversity and variety of the information that you put together is just as important as that information itself. Sometimes effective information, meaningful information in an organization will come from places that are not the routine and not the norm and not the ordinary places where you routinely get information with regard to make decisions and judgments about the health and vitality of the organization. In a highly innovative organization, the leader reads broadly, often beyond the normal scope of legitimate information that provides some sign of the health and vitality of the organization. Leaders seek opportunity for new sources of information, new kinds of reading, new kinds of input, new kinds of thinking with regard to what's going on in the organization and ways of thinking about how that organization will fit in light of a changing future. The leader who is available to broader sources of information, who reads outside their own field, their own organization, their own interests, who uses information and data from sources not traditionally considered as appropriate, really provides a wider frame of reference for developing insight and for applying that insight to organizational dynamics and decision making in a way that might actually create new ways of thinking, of planning, of acting, and of responding to the shifting demands of an environment or context that is calling the organization to become different, to grow differently, or to serve its consumers, its population, in a way that will advance both the interests of those it serves and the organization itself. Here again, the leader creates a high level of trust by being available and open to different kinds of thinking, different kinds of information, and different kinds of interaction and communication with staff and others within and outside the organization in a way that can help the organization adapt more critically to the kinds of changes or the dramatic adjustments it must make in order to thrive and succeed in a complex but highly changing social system. Another skill that is often mentioned but quickly forgotten for the leader, whether it's an innovation leader or not, but we hope all leaders are innovation leaders, is the ability to quickly admit mistakes and errors on your own part. You know, the important thing about admitting errors or mistakes is not just simply admitting errors or mistakes, but being able to have facility enough to admit them quickly, to be available to them. One of the strengths of really good leaders is the ability to be able to say quickly, you know, I'm not sure, or I'm unclear, I not only may be wrong, I have been wrong. And the understanding that you have that there is a huge potential to be wrong, that there is a greater potential to be wrong than to be right in the course of unilateral decision making or unilateral thinking or unilateral action. This notion of unilateral wisdom and having a corner on the market, and that these individual skills is a part of that old American hero notion that we are led by heroes, we are led by those who have great charisma, and we are led by individuals who have great individual strength. It's a part of our American heritage and American culture, and we idealize single, unilateral, individualistic mindsets and leadership behaviors and risk-taking and all of those kinds of things as though somehow they are unique and ideal, and we want to be able to have a person that we can identify with that fulfills those notions of heroism and singular greatness and rightness and all of those kinds of characteristics. Yet, the research shows, especially contemporary research and highly complex thinking in quantum organizations and in networked organizations, that that heroism is the ability to set the table right. Heroism is the ability to get the right stakeholders in the right place. Heroism is to is the ability to make owners of decisions make those decisions well. Good leaders don't make unilateral decisions. They make good decisions by virtue of how they've engaged those who own those decisions, who have the capacity for those decisions, whose skills are great in relationship to those decisions. So it's really important for the individual to recognize that collective wisdom and creating a collective database and collective insight demands our ability and our willingness to sacrifice our strangling attachment to our own ideas, to our own unilateral notions, to our non-aligned, independent, non-related ideas of what's right or wrong or best or not best, but instead to be able to collect and to gather the insights necessary to integrate, to facilitate those insights, to be able to synthesize all of that in a way that is viable and valuable, and out of that begin to discern the most right information, the most right direction to go, the most right choices to make, and to recognize when one's ideas or notions or decisions were not effective, not appropriate, or were wrong in relationship to that, that that's all right. It's not a negative. It's not a loss. It's not a diminishment. It's simply a recognition of the reality of unilateral thinking, uninformed or incomplete or untimely or just simply inadequate. So it's important for us to recognize as innovation leaders that that capacity is actually a skill, to acknowledge our own mistakes, to acknowledge our own judgment issues, so that we can be able to demonstrate, to mentor, to show others that that capacity is one to be trusted, one to be valued, and one that is clearly appropriate as we begin to unfold it in our own skill sets. I think, finally, I want to suggest that creating open organizations, openness with regard to our relationship, openness with regard to information, making information something that is a tool, it's not a control, it's not a secret, it's not hidden. We worry so much about the competition or about others or about what people know. We worry about our own positions and locus of control and power by virtue of manipulating and managing information. We don't realize in the long term we all pay a heavy price for that lack of transparency, the lack of openness and availability with regard to information. And that as a leader, the way in which we manage information, share it, share our own insights, share what we know and don't know, and how we encourage that at every level of the organization is a really kind of a cornerstone of what creates an innovative organization and makes that organization operate more effectively and more with more meaning. You know, transparency and openness is essential in networked and complex organizational systems because the cornerstone of complexity and networking is the total interdependency that all of us have at some level or other, at every level of measure, on some other factor or some other element of our social thing, interaction and our social organization. It's really, really important to recognize that the messages that we need, the relationships we need to build, the information that we need to share, the decisions that we need to make, all have an intersecting and interacting impact on everybody in the organization at some level of intensity. And that in consideration of really strong and appropriate leadership, that sense of openness and availability and free flow of information becomes really critical to the effectiveness of the system in making that a way of life, making transparency a way of being, and assuring that a transparent organization is a representation of a transparent leadership, and that transparent leadership represents transparent communication, transparent relationships, transparent interaction, and a recognition of the transparency of intersections. All of this begins to demonstrate to others a level of trust, a level of confidence, a level of freedom, a level of openness that builds not just inside of the organization, not just in the relationships between the leader and those the leader relates to, but as a social condition, a social circumstances, a social way of being, a demonstration, if you will, of the openness of your society, the freedom of your society, and the relationships that are necessary to sustain that. These are all really critical to building the foundations that lead to trust. As I began this brief podcast, I said we're really going to talk about some of the simple elements that relate to trust for innovation leaders. Using O'Toole and Bennis's outlines, we've taken just a few of the concepts and just of some of the simple notions and just built on them as a way of reminding ourselves how critical these patterns of behavior and these conditions are to the effectiveness of the leader, the role of the leader in the organization and with the leader's peers in building an effective organization, and creating a level of transparency and openness that demonstrates trust. As we mentioned at the beginning, you can't create trust, but you can demonstrate the trust of your organization by what you create in the organization that exemplifies that level of trust. Taking these simple leader skills, these simple notions of trust that are essential within the role of leadership and the organization begins essentially to remind us about those foundations and to re-engage the impact of applying those to the vitality and the transparency and the life of the organization, and also reinforces, revalidates, and reconfirms the centrality of the demonstration of those in the role of the leader and those as essential constituents of the innovation dynamic that the leader must represent in his or her role. And I'm hoping that just this brief reminder will be enough to re-engage that in the individual as leader in a way that will reaffirm it in the life of the organization.